Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 3rd, 2026. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. How are things going, Alex?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So this week we've got a frontline report from something called the Global Experience at London Business School, as well as Real Humans. We'll hear from folks working at Bain, Adobe, and National Grid Ventures. And of course, you've picked out a handful of candidates. These are all DecisionWire candidates that we're going to talk about, and they all have kind of tough decision dilemmas. But first up, what's going on, Alex? Where are we in the cycle? Are you, is round three kind of wrapping up, or we're still in the throes of it?
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to see decisions coming out for round three, for sure. So Darden, Haas, McCombs, Johnson, INSEAD, Fuqua, Owen and Broad are releasing decisions next week. And we also have some application deadlines still. So TEPA and IESE have upcoming deadlines next week.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So still some things happening.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's May. One of the things I've been noticing is I've been emailing with a bunch of admissions directors as we get ready for our big event in Atlanta with the MBA fair and stuff. And, you know, they've all been mentioning, oh, I'm really busy. I've got admissions weekend or admit weekend. So Those have all been happening over the last handful of weekends. I think Yale's was this past weekend. Maybe the same thing for UCLA Anderson. I mean, they're just, you know, this is that time of year. And I love seeing the posts on LinkedIn. And even just exchanging emails with the admissions directors because they're so energized at this time of year. I mean, they're a little worn down from doing all their admissions work, but they're so excited to kind of welcome the candidates they've admitted to campus and just, yeah, get to, I don't know, just see these living, breathing candidates come to life on campus. It's really fun for them.
Yeah, I always used to enjoy welcome weekend at Wharton. Even to the extent that I think when we welcomed your class in, that I might have had something written up in my employment thing in the whatever it was.
Did you get in trouble?
I think I got into trouble. Actually, it wasn't your class coming in. It was your class running Welcome Weekend. That was the problem.
I
won't point fingers at anyone in your class. And it's certainly not their fault that they had me under the luge whilst they were pouring some spirit or whatever down the thing. But it set my career back maybe a little bit.
Some of these welcome events, and this is why we say, you know, go to the welcome events, but obviously know that this is like, you know, they're really rolling out the red carpet. So it's, it's a lot of fun, the welcome events for sure. Speaking of events though, we just published, because it's now May, which I can't even believe, we just published our May events blog post. You know, we put up a post every month on our website with all the key events. And obviously we spent a fair amount of time in that post talking about all of our events because we have our big MBA fair in Atlanta in just, you know, a little more than a week's time. And it's, you know, yeah. So there's a lot going on, but you can, you know, you can go to that post and see, we go by school. So you can literally click on a top school and see where are they going to be in the world, you know, where in the world would they be doing in-person events that in the month of May. And so obviously on May 11th, they're all going to be in Atlanta at our fair. I've had so much fun recently. I've been putting together the questions I'm going to ask the panelists, and there's five panels we're going to run over the course of the evening at our MBA fair.
What are the topics of the panels, Graham?
Yeah, so we've got one about financing the MBA. Yeah. We've got one about kind of careers. So we've got the head of careers from Georgia Tech Scheller, as well as a partner from Bain. And then we have three kind of admissions-oriented panels. So one is, you know, just sort of about like what is the MBA and how does it work? Like what do you learn, et cetera? So that's more of a kind of a basic primer. And then we have two very deep dive admissions tips panels that we're running. One will be, I think it's called What You've Done. So the things that you bring to the table, your work experience, the activities you've engaged in, your grades, test scores. And then the next panel, that second admissions tips panel, is more about what you say. So essays, recommendation letters, interviews. So just how you kind of position yourself as an applicant. In any event, so that's all really exciting. We're kind of preparing that stuff and that's what we're up to.
Very good. Very good.
We've got virtual events after that on May 19th, 20th, 26th, and 27th at noon Eastern. I think there are 18 or maybe now 20 schools taking part in those events. I want to say it's 20 because I think they're all booked up. And that includes Berkeley, Wharton, Chicago Booth, MIT, Yale, Columbia. There's a long list. I can't read it all here. But should be good stuff. And you can sign up for all these events. Just go to clearadmit.com/events and you can get sorted. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention, Alex, in the news and notes kind of category is that we ran this piece on our website, which was written by a current student named Regina, who's at London Business School. She's in the class of 26, so she's going to be graduating very soon. And she went on a global experience. I don't know if you, I know you've done some work for LBS, I think mostly in executive education, but are you familiar with this global experience thing that they do? It's part of the kind of MBA curriculum.
I'm not directly familiar with it, no.
Okay. So my understanding is basically students go on a trip together in a kind of small group, and it's kind of a study tour. And I think there's a lot of work that goes into this before they leave, where they're kind of studying the local kind of culture and business environment. And so this trip that Regina went on was a global experience to Beijing.
It sounds like the Global Immersion Program at Wharton, right?
Yeah, very similar. Yeah. So her trip was about kind of a focus on sustainability, the economic system in China, and more. And I just want to read a quote. She really had a good time. I mean, she was just overwhelmed. She says, "When I signed up for LBS's global experience in Beijing, I expected a week of company visits and lectures. What I didn't expect was how quickly those experiences would reshape the way I think about business, sustainability, and scale. Over the course of a week, we explored how Chinese businesses and institutions are navigating the transition towards sustainability while also experiencing firsthand the speed and ambition that define the country today." So I thought that was interesting. And there's a whole, I mean, this is a long article. You can read it on the site, but she gets into a lot of detail and there's some great photos. They went and visited some electric vehicle factories. And I mean, there's a lot in there. And obviously LBS did a great job of organizing that. So very cool stuff.
Do you know what a dart factory is, Graham?
A dart factory?
A dart. D-A-R-K. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so it's, and they have them in China, right? Factories where they don't need to turn the lights on because it's all robotic. And there's a dark factory, and my numbers might be slightly off, but they produce one car every 60 seconds.
Yeah, oh, wow. So he was talking about this in the article too, about how she couldn't believe. She went into a factory that, you know, all robotic, and she couldn't believe the speed at which things are moving down the assembly line.
I would say China, in my mind, is well ahead of the United States or the rest of the world in terms of EV, solar, renewable energy. I think that the US has basically said, you know what, we don't care about this anymore. And it's really allowed China to push its advantage in that. And that goes to batteries, solar, and obviously vehicle production, EV, automobiles and stuff. They have a problem, i.e. domestic demand. But the point is, they're well ahead on the supply side, and they're well ahead on robotics.
And
they're exporting that robotics around the world. That's going to be a serious challenge, in my mind, in the long run for US sort of, you know, competition, et cetera, et cetera. So I haven't read this article, but I know we chatted about it a little bit before coming on air. I would probably be pretty enamored by a 1 week visit to China too.
Yeah. And one last thing she mentions, and I totally, you just reminded me, there's a factory I think that they went to where they're making these batteries that are, so, you know, normally if you have an electric vehicle, you stop and you charge when you need to refuel. Yeah. They have this, I guess, this concept in China where you don't need to stop and recharge. You stop and they swap the battery. They have this system that they're working on, I guess, where the battery is easily accessible and they just pull it out, put a new one in, and then you go on your way. Yeah. And you just, it's constantly, you know, so just interesting to think about that.
But, but I mean, I know this is off topic for what we really should be talking about, but I mean, the charging of batteries now, like their innovation in battery tech is extraordinary. So, you know, I read Slashdot every day, which is my geeky, whatever, but the, you know, you can charge you their latest tech. You can charge in, you know, minutes, seconds, or minutes, and get a range up to 600 miles. So,
yeah, that's terrific.
So this range anxiety stuff that I suffer because I have an EV vehicle, etc., is going to be a thing of the past.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, go read that article if you're interested in London Business School or just interested in learning a little bit more about China and kind of their economy and particularly sustainability. One other thing I wanted to tackle before we talk candidates is I've got three real humans. These are grads of top MBA programs who are out there in the workforce. I'm going to start with Tatiana, who is a Duke Fuqua grad. She did an MBA and an MEM, which is a Master of Environmental Management. So very consistent with our sustainability theme here. And she graduated back in 24. She's currently the lead analyst at National Grid Ventures. She's originally from Russia, but went to undergrad at UVA in mechanical engineering before heading off to Duke. And before business school, actually, she did work for about 6 years as a technology consultant at IBM, supporting the US federal government. And so, you know, went to business school and she's been, you know, obviously at National Grid Ventures since, and she's helping, I guess she says that, lead analyst within our commercial business development group focused on analyzing various business opportunities within the electric power sector. So sounds like really interesting work. And we asked her, you know, is there anything you would change or do differently as part of your job search, when you were at Fuqua? And she said, I would ask more about the challenges each person you're speaking with is currently tackling. If you don't get excited about what they're talking about, it's a good sign that you should look to other industries or roles. If you do get excited about the challenge, follow up with the person after the conversation with concrete ideas about what could make their roles and challenges easier, which could possibly lead to role creation for you. So interesting advice on the career side. And then we also asked her if there was any like general advice that she wished she'd been given during the MBA. And this one's interesting. She says, write out your specific goals each quarter and order them by level of priority. And then only focus on the top three, revisiting them every so often to ensure that you're on track and aligned with those goals. With so many different opportunities to engage with during your 2 years in the MBA, it can be easy to get distracted and overwhelmed in trying to do everything. Embracing the JOMO, which stands for joy of missing out, is much easier when you know you are exactly on the path towards meeting your specific goals. So I thought that was interesting advice too.
I'd never heard that term before, JOMO.
Me neither. I love it, right? Yeah.
Oh boy.
But
no,
I think,
very,
you know,
good. Great advice. Yeah. But yeah, it's amazing how these young people speak a different language.
So, and I think she's making a good point though, just because there's so much on offer in all these MBA programs,
yes,
that, you know, being focused, yeah, can pay dividends. We also caught up with, let's see, Kwamina, who is a Berkeley Haas grad from the class of 25, and is currently a product manager at Adobe. He's 32, originally from Cape Coast, Ghana, and he went to looks like he studied actuarial science as an undergrad back home in Ghana, and then obviously did his MBA at Berkeley. He, before business school, was head of product management at a fintech infrastructure company. And he also spent several years working for Vodafone Ghana in telecommunications. And now, as I said, product manager at Adobe, focused on their product that's called Lightroom. And he said, what piece of advice do you wish you had been given during your MBA? He says, be intentional about what you say yes to. Business school expands your options dramatically, and it's easy to feel like you must do everything. I once read a reflection comparing the MBA to Gaudi's devotion to the Sagrada Familia, which is the church in Barcelona, and the idea that true depth requires focus. You don't need to say yes to every opportunity to get full value from the experience. Real growth comes from committing deeply to the few areas and relationships that genuinely align with who you want to become. So that's kind of, I didn't do that on purpose. That fits pretty well with the advice from Regina earlier.
That's all I was going to say. They're obviously singing off the same hymn sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone compare the MBA to Gaudi's cathedral in Barcelona. And I, as an art history major, I
that's
kind of
why
struggled
you picked
to.
It. Yeah.
But anyway, and then the last alum that we caught up with was this guy named Carlos. He's 33. He's from Guadalajara, Mexico, and he did his MBA at Cornell Johnson. He's now a consultant at Bain. He went to the Tecnológico de Monterrey in Mexico for his undergrad, where he studied international relations. And, you know, he then did some work at, he worked in the government and public sector doing UK trade and investment for 5 years. And then he also worked in human resources. So a little bit of a non-traditional candidate with that sort of public sector HR focus. And now he's been at Bain for, I guess, about a year or so. And we asked him, what's one thing you would absolutely do again as part of the job search? And he says, consulting is a highly people-driven industry. So being intentional about networking is critical. It is important to think carefully about who you're reaching out to and what questions you are asking. Since your time and energy are limited during the job search, having a clear networking strategy makes a real difference. I also cannot emphasize the importance of being genuine in your approach. The only way to truly understand the industry is by showing an authentic interest in the work consultants do and the challenges they face daily. That sincerity not only helps you learn faster, but also builds stronger, more meaningful connections. So interesting advice about the job search. And then we also just asked him if he had any general kind of MBA advice. And he said, the 2 years of an MBA go by much faster than you expect and you will likely never again have the chance to live and learn alongside the same group of people in such an intense and unique environment. Recruiting and academics matter and deserve real focus, but the relationships you build and the experiences you share are just as important. Invest time in your classmates, learn from their stories, and spend time with them outside the classroom. Careers evolve, but the friendships and perspective you gain during those 2 years stay with you long after graduation. So advice from Carlos, who's at Bain, who went to Cornell Johnson. Any thoughts on that, Alex?
Well, I completely agree in terms of the relationships and the friendships. I think all three spoke very eloquently, but I'm a big believer in that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And when I look back, I definitely remember the friendships and the people and also
you're going to catch up with folks, right?
Yeah, I'm going to reunion soon. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see. But just the stories that they share, and I'm not talking about, you know, anecdotes about their antics when they were in university. I mean, these are stories people are sharing from their work experience that can be so valuable as you kind of, you know, figure out a landscape of a certain industry, et cetera. So in any event, yeah, those are the Real Humans for this week. If you want to write to Alex and I, you can write to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps, and we'll try to get you a response as soon as we can. Alex, anything else before we talk about the candidates that you've chosen for this episode?
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. Our first candidate this week comes from a DecisionWire entry, and this person is undecided. They applied to Georgetown, London Business School, and Oxford. Oh, and Yale as well. And they did so with a GRE score of 313, a GPA of 3.53. They're located in India. They've been working at the World Bank for 5.5 years, and they want to stay in kind of social development, but pivot their job function to private sector-led development. They would love to work again at the World Bank in development finance roles or other similar development institutions. They ended up getting into both Georgetown and Oxford. It sounds like they didn't get into LBS or Yale. And it doesn't seem like there's any money being offered. So this is full fare. As you know, Oxford is a one-year MBA. And Georgetown is a two-year or really like 20-month MBA program. So what do you think here? I mean, given their goals I think you asked them some questions about whether they had preference geographically, right? And they said that they don't. And that they don't also have a big preference for 1 year versus 20 month, as long as they can pivot to the technical roles in development finance with minimal geographical restrictions. Yeah, so what do you think of this?
I think that's the key, that last phrase, as long as they can pivot into a more technical role. I'm just sort of presuming they have a reasonably non-technical background as well as undergraduate, et cetera, et cetera. And they're using the MBA to provide those technical skills to then return to the World Bank in development finance, whatever it might be. And because of that, I do think a two-year MBA experience might serve them better. It'll give them the ability to focus more deeply on developing those technical aspects. It gives them the better opportunity for internship exposure, etc., etc. So, you know, I do think the two-year experience is better generally for those that want to pivot rather than those that want to stay in the same industry, working in similar functions but at a higher level, right? So I do think that in that case, Georgetown might be the better option. It obviously provides them exposure to being in DC, in the United States, etc. That might be advantageous, maybe not. Maybe they would prefer to be in the UK and Europe. But also, and we talked about this before we came on air, the World Bank is headquartered in DC.
Yeah.
So that might also provide them more opportunity for access in term, in semester, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think both are very good programs in terms of on the social side, you know, the policy side and so on and so forth. But to me, Georgetown might make more sense in this case.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And part of why I'll agree as well is just because, so not only is the World Bank headquartered in DC, but, you know, alongside myriad other kind of, you know, similar development organizations and NGOs. And so there's a lot on offer. And one of the things I'm thinking about is, if this person's Indian and they go to Oxford and they do want to go and work in the States at one of these types of entities, that's going to be challenging because whereas if they go to Georgetown and pursue the MBA and graduate, they can stay for up to 3 years and work automatically. And so there's an easier path with that STEM OPT option.
Yeah.
Now, if they wanted to work in the UK, upon graduation from Oxford, they could stay for 18 months automatically, even without a job in hand, and live in the UK and work. So they do have options, but they're somewhat restrictive, right? So I'd say the same thing. If they knew they wanted to go to the UK after the US, that's not so easy either, right? So anyway, they need to think that through. But I am leaning towards the idea that a longer program like Georgetown's, where there's a summer where they can do an internship, as you said, big, big advantage in this instance, I think.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Yeah.
All right. So I want to thank them for sharing their profile and outcomes and congratulate them on those acceptances to two wonderful programs. Obviously, can't really go wrong, but I think in this instance, based on their goals, it does look like Georgetown is the front runner here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So our second candidate this week applied to Dartmouth, MIT, Kellogg, and Wharton. And again, these are all this week, all decision wire entries, all undecided. This person got into Dartmouth, MIT, and Wharton. So they got into three very top programs. In case you're curious, their GRE score was a 327 and their GPA a 3.44. They had 6 years of work experience before, to date. And they all those years were in healthcare, both in kind of startups and consulting. And they say they're looking to break into the tech or VC space, and that they're torn between Wharton, where they've been accepted to the healthcare management major at Wharton, the only major at Wharton that you have to kind of predetermine like when you're applying. And they also are debating between, so that program and Sloan. And they would love our input or feedback. So they've kind of eliminated Dartmouth from the list. What do you think about this, Alex? Because, you know, these are two great schools, both M7. What do you make of it?
In the grand scheme of things, I'd put Wharton in front of Sloan in terms of, you know, just being in a slightly higher tier. Both M7 programs, but Wharton much larger. It also has that strong healthcare management program that you alluded to, that's very notable, and so forth. So, with their tech VC / healthcare goals, I think that fits really well with Wharton. The only slight question is whether they're interested in focusing on more of the biotech area, and is that better developed in Boston? And therefore, does Sloan provide an advantage for that? What do you think of that, Graham?
It is tricky, right? I think Philadelphia and Boston are both really good markets for all things healthcare. I do think biotech has, is a bit more centered in Boston. But can you go from Wharton Healthcare Management up to Boston and work afterwards? Absolutely. I mean, Wharton is the most renowned healthcare management program. I mean, it's really far ahead of everyone in this domain. So the thing that was a little tricky to me is I just didn't understand when they say looking to break into tech or VC, I didn't understand if they still want that healthcare focus. I'm going to assume yes, because they actually chose the healthcare management major at Wharton. But it's possible that they're looking to use the MBA to pivot, in which case then you start to say, well, which school would just be better for tech or VC? But I still think Wharton has a little bit of an edge for the reasons you said. I mean, it's just sort of slightly outranked.
Especially on the VC side, yes.
So it's tricky. Yeah, tech, maybe you could argue, obviously. So yeah, I mean, obviously they're so fortunate to have two M7 offers in hand. It doesn't look like there's any money involved, like no scholarships. But I would lean Wharton Healthcare Management, given their goals, and especially if those goals involve healthcare, which I think they do based on this post. So yeah, but interesting dilemma.
I mean, if they had a personal fit for Sloan, and let's say their partner had a job in Boston, et cetera, you could argue, well, actually, Sloan's not a bad
Oh, yeah.
decision. It's just that against Wharton, they're both great opportunities, but as you point out, for healthcare, for sure, Wharton is a step above.
Yeah.
I think Wharton wins. But there are reasons why someone might choose Sloan over Wharton in this case, is my point.
Yeah. Totally agree. And hopefully they went to the welcome events for these two programs, because maybe that would help them get a better handle on things. But yeah, no, they're definitely in good shape overall. And
And hopefully they didn't do at the Wharton Welcome Weekend what I did
I don't even want to know.
when your year was running it. Yes.
Oh boy. Anyway, so I want to thank them for sharing and obviously congratulate them on their results. But let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So our final candidate this week, again, comes from a DecisionWire entry that someone shared on the site. This person applied to Duke, Anderson at UCLA, and USC Marshall. They ran the table and got into all three schools. Fuqua is actually offering them $140,000 in scholarship. UCLA, $40,000, and USC Marshall is offering them $150,000 scholarship. They had a 310 on the GRE. They indicate that they want to work in consulting on the West Coast after business school, and they cannot decide. And so, we kind of, both you and Elliot on our team kind of chimed in with comments on their post, and they said they're already living on the West Coast and they're planning to be in Los Angeles after graduation. So that's the situation right now. What do you make of these options, and are there any that you pull off the table? I mean, again, it's Duke with 140, Marshall with 150, and Anderson at UCLA with just 40,000.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd favor Fuqua over Anderson with that money difference.
Yes.
Even if they want to go back to LA, which is obviously Anderson's in Anderson's wheelhouse. But that is such a significant difference in scholarship opportunity. I think again, Marshall over Anderson, probably for the same reason. So I would weigh it between Fuqua and Marshall in terms of where they should go. And I would look really closely at Fuqua's West Coast and LA focused alumni network and see how vibrant that is and so forth, and see what opportunities this person will have to get a consulting opportunity back in LA, because they obviously have some of their own networks already established in LA since they're already there. So it might actually be quite a good experience for them to leave LA, to go to a very strong MBA program that can then provide them access back into LA. But I wouldn't probably do that if they're the only Fuqua alum working in consulting in LA. That's probably not the smartest thing to do. So I would check how vibrant and large the alumni network at Fuqua is in their current where they are now.
Yeah, and they're just a short kind of Google search away from doing that. While you were talking, I was just kind of peeking, and you know, there's a Southern California Duke Alumni Club with a whole leadership committee, and they have a directory of all the alumni that are out there. They have, you know, presence on social media. There's a LinkedIn group. So I think there clearly is a, you know, a Duke presence out in Southern California. You know, there's like subchapters. There's a San Diego chapter, obviously, LA, et cetera. So there's a lot going on. And I think they can, you know, make that argument that the difference is $140,000 from Fuqua is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Fuqua is definitely, you know, as you say, like it's ranked well above USC Marshall. I just feel like, and also, I mean, this is just maybe me kind of imposing my own thoughts, but if they're already in LA and that's where they've been and that's where they're going to be after business school, there's a little part of me that's like, hey, go have a couple of years experience where you kind of unplug from that. You know, obviously Durham's a great place to, you know, the Duke campus is beautiful. It's a close-knit community. There's a lot to offer there that's a different experience than kind of an urban setting.
Yeah.
And so I feel like they'll get a lot out of it. And that could be a nice just experience for them to have. And again, I feel like Duke is a big enough brand. And with all that money, you know, they'll find their way back to LA. I'm not worried about that. So that feels like the right choice to me.
What was their undergrad GPA? Did they report that?
They didn't actually, okay. No. Because that GRE score is, you know, 310 is a lower school.
They must have a really strong profile that's obviously helps supplement that lower GRE. But yeah, I was just curious. I think Fuqua would be a great experience for them. But again, it's predicated on, is that alumni network active? Mm-hmm. You can have a website, you can have some social media, but are they meeting? Are they engaging? Are they running events, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but you know, they could look at the Duke, Fuqua employment report and also just peek at like historically what percentage
they
of classes.
They can ask alums at Duke. They've been admitted, so they're going to get access to and answers to any question that they have, right?
Yeah.
So now really kick the tires hard.
Yeah. So, in any event, great, you know, great candidates as always this week, Alex. And I want to, congratulate that person on not only getting into the three schools they applied to, but with all kinds of money. Really impressive. Wish them the best of luck as they make the decision. But Alex, thanks again for picking these out as always. And let's connect next week and do it again.
Very good. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.